Okay, I am back, and this is live. I apologize for yesterday. I had to run a rerun yesterday because on Friday, when I normally record for Monday, I actually thought I had COVID. I wasn't feeling very good. I had been sick a couple weeks before and tested myself, and it was negative. And then I got better. And then about 3 days later, I got sick again. And I'm thinking, okay, well, maybe this is COVID. It wasn't. So here I is. And, you know, sometimes the days do get away from you, don't they? And you have more things to do than you can keep track of. This morning, I've been dealing with a representative from the Department of Commerce in the state of Tennessee, where they investigate basically advertising violations or any kind of violation that you may have as a dealer. You know, like, for example, operating without a license. That is discouraged upon. So, you know, occasionally we have to renew our license. Well, we were just a little bit late on getting our license renewed, and so they had to come in and inspect a few things at Gateway to make sure that I was in compliance. That's what happens when you misbehave and you fail to do what you're supposed to do. Got an unwelcome message from Ford yesterday. They are actually going to suspend reservations, which is basically people promising that they're going to buy something. It doesn't mean they've actually ordered it. But they are suspending reservations for the new Ford Maverick, for the hybrid pickup, that is. Now, not all Mavericks are the hybrid version. The base model is actually a hybrid. Normally, you know, you pay extra to get a hybrid, but in this particular case, the base model is not, and that's the one a lot of people want because the base price is right at $20,000. You know, I have a lot of people over the years have said, you know, small trucks have gotten so big, and it's true. I mean, if you look at the new Ford Ranger, it's about 90% of what an F-150 is. The small trucks that I grew up with, beginning with the one I used to drive as a parts truck at Lawson Chevrolet back in the early 70s, was a Chevrolet Love truck, LUV, and it was a, you know, very basic manual transmission. I think you could get an automatic at the time, but that was our parts delivery truck, and very crude, but very simple. I wish I still had it, but the Love truck was made by Isuzu. And then Ford had a competing truck. I don't know if you remember the name of it. It was actually called the Ford Courier. And that truck was made by Mazda for Ford at the time. Ford was working together with Mazda. At that point, Ford didn't own, they might have had a minor stake in Mazda, but that eventually went up to about 30% of the company. And then Ford divested themselves of the Mazda ownership. Now Mazda is on their own. Dodge actually had a relationship with Mitsubishi at the time. They developed the, I think it was called the Ram, the first Ram 50 or D50 van. And that was pretty much the big three offerings, all from Japan. And it was, did I say it was from Mitsubishi? Maybe I did. And then, of course, you had Datsun, which was making their small truck, which eventually became the Frontier. But they were small. You know, there were no, early on, there were no extended cabs. They were all, for the most part, they might have made a long bed. I don't recall. But most of the ones that I saw were pretty much a short bed. Still might have been 6 feet. But very lightweight and very unsafe. And at the time, there were no real regulations for safety. There were some, but, you know, they were pretty lax when it come to. There was no Insurance Institute of Highway Safety that was crash testing these things. Again, I apologize for my voice because I do have remnants of a cold. So basically, as the government ratcheted up their requirements for small trucks, they started getting really too pricey. In light of the fact that there was a 25% import duty on these as a result of what they called the chicken tax, and we've talked about that in the past. That was a tariff war, basically, that was started by the European countries against the United States against imported chickens. And so LBJ, Lyndon Baines Johnson, actually, he was our president. And he said, okay, well, if you're going to put duties on our chickens, we're going to put duties on your light-duty trucks and any kind of commercial vehicle. So for a long time, the vehicle importers could still make money. But it got to the point where because of the new regulations, new bumper requirements and emission controls and all that stuff, they couldn't make money anymore. So Datsun decided to build a plant in Smyrna, Tennessee, and started building their trucks domestically to avoid the chicken tax. Mazda, for example, had the B2000, B2200 trucks, and they decided, well, we can't afford to build a plant, so we'll just buy Rangers from Ford and rebadge them as Mazdas. So they did that. I think that was 1994 when the first Mazda B, I think it was a B2200 and a B2600 and so forth, they started coming out, and they were basically Ford Rangers. And we sold them pretty well. Dodge got out of the game and invented the midsize truck with the Dodge Dakota. You may remember that truck. It was the first midsize truck, and it was advertised as such. But eventually, the trucks from all the other manufacturers started growing into that midsize category, and there was no small truck. Well, here comes the Maverick, and is basically saying, okay, since there are no small trucks, we'll make one. And so they Ford engineers designed the Maverick based on the Ford Escape chassis, which was modified to create the Ford Bronco Sport. So if you look at a Bronco Sport, the front end and basically the interior, it is exact duplicate of the Maverick with a few some minor changes. But the Maverick, of course, is a four-door truck with a bed on it, and everybody wants one. Well, you may not, but a lot of people want the truck just simply because it's so affordable. And really drives good. We had one for a while that I took as a demo down to the Harper's Cars and Coffee event down in Knoxville. That is a huge event. I think they had like somewhere between 6,000 and 8,000 cars down there. But I mean, when I parked that Maverick, it was swarmed by people, young and old, very interested in the small truck. And it's really not that small. On the inside, you got plenty of room for two adults in the front and three regular, not two vertically challenged adults, but, you know, I wouldn't want to sit back there, but I can, you know, four full-size adults and maybe three kids. So it is very functional. The 4.5-foot bed's a little limiting. The only competitor for that truck now is the Hyundai Santa Cruz. They can't get any of them either. And so, but it's a much more car-like design, I should say. The Maverick is a box. And a lot of the press is saying how much they like the Maverick better than the Cruz. I don't know. But anyway, you can't reserve one for yourself now. It looks like it's going to be 2023 before you can reserve one online. So, you know, you may be seeing some of these being sold used, but I doubt it. It's going to be rare. And if you see one, it's going to be probably over the MSRP for what it's sold for new. So this is a trend that we see happening. And it's really due to the chip shortage, simply because they cannot afford to put all of these, all this sophistication in vehicles. Simple vehicles are much easier to build because they don't require as many chips. And the chip shortage is back. Automotive News headline, yep, it's back for year two, and it won't find any relief for months. Intel has decided to build a large chip factory somewhere in Ohio, so some small town in Ohio is going to be very excited about that opportunity. Toyota just said that their original outlook for 2022 was going to have their production cut by about 150,000 units. Now, this is worldwide, but it's actually going to be about 700,000 units worldwide. You know, this thing has got a lot of people's attention, including the federal government, and they're saying that this is a national security problem, that we don't have the capacity to manufacture our own demand of chips. You know, and I'm glad to see that, and thank you, Intel, for building your plant. I think you're going to see automakers figure out a way to get dedicated production for them and them only, which means they may own some of the production capability of microprocessors. It's such a big deal. Chips are so widely used, and the more sophisticated chips that are used in iPhones and Android devices and PlayStations and all those types of heavy computing have not been the type of chips that have been popular in cars. They refer to those as analog chips, and they're very widely used and perform, you know, fairly basic functions in automobiles, but nobody's making them anymore. So that's not exactly true. They're making them. They're just not making as many as they used to. And thus, when your cars are designed to use those and you can't get them, then that forces the car makers to push them outside and wait until more chips come in. So that's where we stand right now. Well, let's take our first break and be back here in just a minute. Okay, I got a question for you. So what is your favorite car seat material? Is it cloth? Is it leather? Or is it fake leather? Okay, I would agree, leather. Okay, so if you have leather seats in your car, let's say you pay extra to get leather seats, are all of the seats leather, including the back of the seats, the side of the seats, and the part that you sit on? That's right. The answer is no. Unless you are buying a Porsche or an Audi or sometimes Mercedes. However, they also use basically a faux leather product, which is fake in French. And so, you know, and a lot of these imitation leather products are feel really natural and good, and they have some really good properties as far as the car, and they cost less. Real leather costs more. And a lot of that has to do with the process of, you know, getting leather from the cow. Yes, it comes from a cow to your vehicle. Every year, there's the equivalent of enough leather to basically carpet all of Rhode Island that is made. That's a lot of cows. Most of it comes from the meat industry. And so, you know, they're just trying to utilize everything they can. It all starts at the slaughterhouse. What a terrible concept, but it's true. And then the leather is transported, or basically the hides. It's not leather yet. They don't call it leather yet. The hides are transported to a tannery where the real process starts. Now, when they arrive there, basically the hides are strapped over wooden beams for drying. And, you know, the hide is cleaned. It's prepared for tanning. And this is a very intensive process, which involves a lot of chemicals. They got to get the hair off of it, remove leftover tissue, and clean the hide. Chemical innovations have really made it possible to use more environmentally friendly technologies in the process, but it used to be a pretty dangerous combination of chemicals that they used to do this. Tanning basically is where the protein structure of the hide is changed into a more stable material, which is actually called leather. By tanning the hide, it becomes protected against swelling, heat, and microorganisms, and things that would make it decay, you know, if it were just out there on the fruited plain. Leather is a long-standing material, but it's still a natural material, and it can eventually be broken down and fully returned back to nature. After the tanning is done, you have leather. Yet it isn't in any kind of condition where it can be used, so it needs a lot of mechanical processing at this point. Water has to be removed from the leather. It's basically squeezed out of it with these big presses. At this point, also, hides are split, creating a grain side, which is the top, and then the meat side, which is the bottom, and the meat side is used to create suede. I thought that was kind of interesting. Finally, the leather is shaved and trimmed to create a very even, neat-looking material. It's also stretched and flattened out in this process before it goes to retanning, which is where it is processed to make it softer. and stronger, and also to add some waterproof qualities to the material. Now, the leather is also colored, dyed, and treated with other chemicals here to make basically make it ready for its final use. And what exactly is added depends on where it's going to be used. I mean, usually upholstery has to be highly resistant leather, resistant to wear, that is. And then garments need to be soft and comfortable. Automotive leather needs to meet some exceptional standards due to all the heat, you know, that you have inside cars, the staining, the soiling, and other environmental factors. After leaving the retanning process, the leather is finished to give it its final look. Now, here the leather is given a color and a matte or a gloss finish. Any grain defects or imperfections are fixed with a base coat. A top coat gives the final touch. And then after testing, the leather is good to go and ready to end up as car seats or upholstery components. I don't know if you've ever watched any of those videos of exotic cars being built, but there is a whole lot more of the hide is used in the building of the seats. And it is even used basically on the dash, the sun visors, the headliner. You look at all of the hides that go into a Rolls-Royce, for example, and it is way more extensive use of leather. But those cars aren't used every day and typically parked inside, you know, in climate-controlled garages and things like that. And, you know, they will last a long time. But, you know, leather has to be treated, and that's something that folks don't do for the most part. I see so many cars come into the shop that are 5 and 6 years old, and the leather is just, you know, where you have to get in and out and go across the bolster on the seat. The leather is just almost destroyed. The top coat is gone. And really all you have to do is clean your leather seats maybe twice a year and then put treatment on them, you know, something to keep them soft and supple. They like that. And it will preserve your leather for when you either decide to keep the car and, you know, start entering it into car shows or actually decide to trade it. It's important to treat your steering wheel as well, because most steering wheels today are covered with leather, and they need to be cleaned probably more often than the seats that you are sitting on. You know, just to give you an example, Porsche, the interiors of Porsches are 100% real leather. They make some models that use synthetic leather, pleather, naugahyde. I don't know what they call it. Audi is another company that uses 100% real leather. So does Volvo. Volvo's at 97%, so that's pretty close. BMW comes in at 80% real leather, and then Lexus at 79%. You know, most of the domestic cars and Japanese and Korean cars are going to use leather only on the seating surfaces. And it's important, I think it's important for you to know whether your car is actually a real leather interior. If you look in and you see what looks like leather, it may not be the real thing. Now, does it matter? You know, I don't think it does. Fabrics, synthetic fabrics have gotten so good over the years. And, you know, I think leather has a different feel. It definitely has a different smell. I mean, I just love climbing into a leather car and just taking a whiff, you know, because it's just such a relaxing thing. I'm a leather nut anyway. As I've mentioned on this show, I've bought a lot of too many things from a company called Colonel Littleton, and he makes leather briefcases and satchels and book covers and all kinds of neat stuff. And just go there, just be prepared, because it's not inexpensive stuff. But you know, if you want something good, you're going to have to pay for it, right? Well, we'll take our last break and be back here in just a second. Okay, on the buyer beware front, you know, if you bought a new car and let's say that 20 to 30 days later, you don't have your tags yet. The dealership was going to get your tags and you didn't trade anything. There's a problem. You need to call somebody. There's no reason for them to not have registered your vehicle in that period of time. If you bought a used car, it's very possible that vehicle was just traded in and might have had a payoff on it. And that payoff sometimes takes a while to clear out, and it takes a while for the dealership to actually get the title back to the car that you purchased so that they can register it for you. A lot of banks are holding checks right now. So if we send a check to pay off a vehicle, you know, you got the time it takes it to go in the mail and then to be processed in the bank, then they will hold our check and hold that title for 10 days. Well, they will hold the title for 10 days until our check clears the bank. Then they mail it out. You have more mail time. Finally, it comes in, and then, you know, it's been quite a while. That can happen. And I've seen that drag out for some time. But if it's been, like, if you're on your second temporary tag and it's approaching your third, there's a more serious problem there. I would go in and speak to the sales manager or the general sales manager. He's the sales manager's boss, or the dealer or GM, and see what's going on. Because there's probably some kind of an issue with the title. And you need to know that. You know, you're driving around on a temporary tag, and I know you want to get that business done with and get your license plate on there. So don't put up with a bunch of delays. And if you don't get a straight answer, then call me and I'll try to intervene for you. This is just something that I don't mind doing. I don't, it's not as if I don't have other things to do, but this radio show and its listeners are important to me. And if I can help you in any way, I'll be glad to. Again, my personal cell phone number is 423-552-2020. There is a reason why you're not getting your title. So let's figure that out. Well, thanks for listening to this edition of My Car Guru, and we'll see you tomorrow.